Down the line, with all these interesting interviews I've been doing, I may decide to write a book. But
Sure.
basically, I just need you to know that we're going to use this for research purposes.
Yeah.
We may post it on the internet. That's okay with you?
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
I'm trying
great.
to think of the guy I know that, well, I've got a book that one of the guys who used to be on with Saber passed away last year or 2 years from cancer.
Not the director?
Dick, he's got two books on the Pacific Coast League.
Oh, wow.
Two great books.
I'll have to get them. I'll have to get copies.
What the heck's his name? And then the other one is, I can't think of his name too. He lives in Rodeo or someplace. He's past president of Saber.
Have you heard of Norman Matt? He's like one of the most published baseball writers.
Oh, he is?
Yeah, he sent me.
Know.
He's a great guy.
Dick Dawkins.
Oh, I'll have to ask him.
Yeah.
But it's funny because I'll interview these guys and then I'll put an email out saying I'm going to interview, you know, Ernie Broglio. So people come back and go, ask him this, ask him that, ask him what happened here, and ask him. So let's just start.
Yeah,
I got,
sure.
One of the things I have, which you probably haven't seen in a while, that I got is all your minor league stats.
No, I don't.
Well, actually, I think that's your entire career.
Oh, okay.
Including your minor league stats. But
The only ones I would have, and my kids got, he's made the collage for me. Up there is a medal from when I was with the Italian national team last year. We got third place in Germany.
Oh, wow, great.
And we got a medal.
Wow.
Yeah, I was the pitching coach for the Italian national team last year.
Wow. Any guys from this area?
Jimmy Davenport was our manager.
But I mean, oh, wow, but I mean any of the kids?
No, mostly they're Italian Americans.
Yeah.
80% of my pitching staff of 10 kids, 80% were Italian Americans, from California, most of them from the East Coast and Midwest.
Wow.
And somehow there's also with the ball players, Italian Americans.
Wow.
Two kids are from Marin County that married Italian girls and stayed over there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow, that'd be great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I knew. Sal Tormina?
Yeah, I was Sal's coach at Santa Clara.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, his kid,
Sal Jr.,
who was a catcher.
Yeah.
And he played in Italy.
I played golf with him.
Really?
Yeah, he did some. In fact, I got him a job across the street to do some work.
How's he doing?
He's doing all right. He's going to De Anza, trying to get a degree. And I think he's playing on the De Anza golf team. He's the oldest guy on
really?
The team. Yeah, they call him.
How old is he now?
Sal Jr. is 40.
He's like my age.
44.
That's my age.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, gosh,
next time. Still lives with his mother.
Really?
Yeah.
Because next time, if you ever see him, tell him, I'll give you my card. It's Ed Atanasio.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, because I knew him. I heard he was a pretty good catcher.
I guess. I don't know. I hadn't seen him in years, and I'm out playing golf one day out at Santa Teresa, a friend of mine and I, early in the morning. And we're a team from the white, and this guy's back in the blues, the deep, you know, and he says, hey. I look around, and I look at him, I said, oh, my God, it's Sal Jr.
Did he lose weight because he was kind of big?
No, he's still heavy.
Is he
yeah,
big?
He's still a little heavy, yeah.
Yeah.
But he's doing all right.
Good.
I get a big kick out of him.
He's funny.
Of pops over there at the.
Yeah.
Yeah, he played 2 years over there, I think, at Bologna.
Yeah.
Where we were. We were in, we had, one of our coaches was the manager of Bologna. And then Jimmy's son, who lives in Italy, Gary, who went to Santa Clara University, signed with the Giants for a couple of years and then went over there and married a girl. And he's been over there 16 years. Jimmy's got two grandkids over there.
Yeah, he's boys. Probably, because I met Gary, he's probably, 38?
No, he's 42.
Yeah, he's my age, yeah, too. Yeah, just around the same time.
Yeah.
We're all the same age.
Yeah.
Well, let me show over some of these. Like, for instance.
Yeah.
So you went to El Cerrito High,
right?
And then you went to West Contra Costa Junior College.
Yeah, but it was off season. I already signed with the Oaks when I went out.
Oh, there. So you had you weren't going to play baseball for them.
No.
And then so you went to the Oakland Oaks in '53,
right?
And you were 2-4. You didn't play. You were 11 games,
right?
And then in '54, you were 5-8. And then you went to Modesto. So tell me about those first couple of years there, Oakland.
Signed out of high school. I had every major league team after me and three coast league teams. And in those days, only 16 teams, major league teams. And Oakland, San Francisco, and Sacramento in the coast league were after me. And it was funny because the Boston Red Sox were really hot after me. And they were going to send me to Montgomery, Alabama. And I looked on a map. I couldn't find it. I said, no, I'm not going to go there. But so I decided to sign with Oakland, as there was Pumpsy Green, who I went to high school with, first black ball player to play for the Boston Red Sox, some other guys that I knew. And we all ended up with the Oakland Oaks in their organization. And then Lefty O'Toole. Okay, in 54, Charlie Dressen was our manager, and he sent me down to get some seasoning with Modesto, and I was 9-3 down there in about, I don't know, 2 months or so.
Year, right?
Yeah. And then they brought me back up, and I think I ended up with 5-8 for the year. And then the following year, Lefty O'Toole was our manager, and I stayed with the ball club for about maybe not quite a month, and he sent me down to Stockton where I won 20 games down there, and Roy Partee was our manager down there, and Augie Galland was the guy that was instrumental. He was from El Cerrito. He was kind of instrumental in getting me signed with the Oaks.
Now, okay, let's talk about these guys. Now, Dressen, I've heard mixed stories about him. I heard that he could be a real...
Oh, he was tough, but I mean, I'm 17 years old, you know. When I signed with the Oaks, I didn't turn 18. I take that back. I turned 18 in August, and I signed in July. So I was 18 when Charlie came there. And he kind of took me under the wing, you know, and he kind of, because I got in a little trouble down in Modesto. I got out in the water and or sunbathing, you know, and I got kind of almost like second-degree burn.
Really?
I had bubbles all over.
That's happened to me, too.
I slept in the bathtub for about
horrible.
3. And so Charlie sent a message down to me, and he said, the next time this happens, it'll be a $1,000 fine. Well, you know, $1,000, I didn't even know what $1,000 looked like. All I know is a bunch of numbers, you know, zeros behind a one. And I said, oh, boy, I better watch out for that. So he... And then he called me up and or brought me back up, and he says, don't ever do that again, you know. But he sent a message down to me to make sure that I'd never done it again.
Now, did he wear street clothes in the dugout?
No. He was a uniform.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he was a uniform.
Okay.
No, in those days, I don't think they did. Well, that was in the middle 50s. They
right.
probably didn't know do all that street clothes stuff until, you know, back in the 30s, maybe.
Right. And then Partee, I guess he... later became kind of well known for promoting his hitting style. Isn't he was the one who talked about the chop. He was a catcher, right?
He was a catcher, yeah. With the I think the last time the Boston Red Sox won, yeah. I think 1946. I thought he was instrumental at the time because he was a New York Mets scout signing Tug McGraw and a few mm-hmm. guys from the Bay Area. Now, as far as hitting, I don't know.
Was he a good, pretty good manager?
Oh, yeah, great manager. Absolutely fantastic guy. Yeah, geez, we had nothing but fun with him. You know,
and
I feel sorry for he passed away here last year, I think.
Yeah.
But
as a catcher, he was pretty good at handling pitchers.
You know, he handled us. We had Charlie Beeman on our staff. He ended up going 16-0, and Oakland bought him up, and then Baltimore bought him from Oakland. And I was 20-10, I think. I'm not sure. 20-10.
And Stockton in 1955.
Yeah.
With 25 complete games, 252 innings pitched.
Well, in those days, it's a little different than now. You know, in those days, what you started, you took pride in completing.
Right.
Nowadays, you
five,
start
six innings.
And you're through in six innings. Then they bring in everybody else, but we had pride.
Now, what was it like playing in Oakland in those days? Did they get pretty good crowds? Were they
no.
Cool? No.
No, it's probably the reason why they went after me, so they can get some local guys. You know, we had a good friend of mine just passed away, Rick Botello, who went to St. Elizabeth High School. Tommy Muniz signed with them. We had about Pumpsy Green signed with them before he was sold to Boston. We had about 7-8 guys out of maybe more than that. I mean, and in my era, and then there was a few more besides, you know, Billy Martin, Jackie Jensen.
Right.
A whole bunch of guys signed prior to that, too. So.
Now, was this kind of because, do you think the reason the small crowds are not that good of support is the Pacific Coast League was kind of dying out?
No, I just think that possibly winning and losing is the difference of getting people to the ballpark. Los Angeles drew good. Hollywood drew good. San Diego, very, you know, not that great, but drew better than Oakland. San Francisco drew better than Oakland. And Sacramento was very close. The only ones that, hey, Portland and Seattle were good too. Oakland was kind of, you know, we just didn't have the caliber of ball players. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's, I think that's the reason why they went after Chuck Dressen and Lefty Odul, so they can't get people right in the park.
Yeah, they have a thing, a website on the Oakland Elks, and they talked about you. And then here's a picture I got of you off the website when you played for St. Louis.
Oh, I'm going to be darned. Because I know there was something on Channel 4 last night.
Oh, really?
At 8 o'clock, something to do with the Pacific Coast League.
Oh, wow. I missed it.
And black ball players.
Oh, wow.
But they was, in baseball in general in the Bay Area. Because I know it's also an, what do you call it? Insert, not insert, but...
Ad for it
with Charlie Beeman was...
Oh, really?
Yeah. That's pretty young.
Well, do you go to the reunion every year?
I missed last year because of being in Italy, and I made about three in a row, yeah. Because, I don't know if you know Bob Murphy.
Oh, sure,
Bob Murphy. Well, Bob Murphy and I signed the same day with the Oakland Oaks.
Mm-hmm.
And he become very, you know, very prominent with Stanford.
Mm-hmm.
And later, you know, athletic director, San Jose State,
right.
Big honcho for Jack Nicklaus's golf course, mm-hmm. In Ohio when they first opened up, and then came back out here and started working with the ESPN.
Right.
And now he does color work for the Stanford ball, football and basketball, I think.
Exactly.
Yeah.
He's pretty well known.
Yeah, a great MC. And I think he's been MCing the AT&T tournament for 20-something years.
Yeah, oh yeah. His voice is so well known now.
He's got
you hear
great,
it on the air radio.
Great jokes.
Well, you know, Gus Triantos was saying, why do you want to interview me? I didn't have a career that anybody cares about. And, you know, he got hit 160-some home runs. And I told him, I said, you know, you put your name in the internet under AOL search, and you come up with over 1,100 matches. And he's like, what? And with yours, you come up with about 3,000.
Really?
3,000.
Oh, jeez.
And you know what the subject of most of them is.
Right.
Now, do you ever get tired of that?
No. Yeah.
Really?
I always tell people, as long as he's alive, I'm still recognized.
Right. Well, I saw one guy who is a former musician who collects autographs like crazy, man, baseball autographs. And he likes to do, like, theme balls. And one of them... was he had signed by both you and Lou Brock. So I'm sure people have done that before, huh?
Yeah.
They want to get something
signed. In fact, I always ask somebody, want me to leave room for Lou Brock? When
Well, it must make the, you know, there were other players involved in that trade, right?
Right, there were six total.
And they, you know, they must feel kind of weird. I mean, how many of those guys are still alive? They're never even mentioned in that trade.
Yeah, I know. Bobby Shantz is one of them.
Yeah, he must say, hey, wait a minute, I was in that trade too.
Yeah, I know, but I guess we were the two main people, so I because I had won 18 games the year before,
right?
And the other ones with Doug Clements, an outfielder, and myself and Bobby Shantz went for Lou Brock, Paul Toth, and somebody else. I can't remember.
So the other guys that were traded with Brock, they washed out, so they they weren't like the big stars,
right? Right,
I mean, Brock was really the only thing they got in that
trade.
Now, what else was I gonna ask you? Oh, have you ever read the book Summer of 64 by Peter Gallenbach? Should have brought it. I should have brought the gift to you.
I'm in that one, and then I'm in another one too. Interviewed with the guy over that brought between it's highway something between Chicago and St. Louis.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's pretty interesting too.
Well, this one, one of the things I wanted to ask you about is they said that you know, you were really shocked when you got traded, you were upset, but you didn't want to really show it,
right?
And that the reason that they traded you, one of the things the owner or the general manager used to tell you, that you didn't have a mean enough face when you were out on the mound?
No, Harry Walker.
Harry Walker.
Harry Walker, the coach.
Right.
And because I, you know, he used to say, well, get fired up, you know, yell at me and stuff. And I said, well, that ain't my nature. I'll take care of the stuff between, you know, when I get out there. Because I would walk, you know, if something, I'd always walk with my head down off the mound. You know, and or walk back out with my head down. But I just, evidently, he just didn't think I had that instinct, that, you know, to be a major league pitcher. But I knew my ability to be a big league pitcher was there. But some guys' characters more, you know, they show more than other people. I mean, you know, he wanted me to be like a Bob Gibson. He wanted, you know, Bob Gibson was thriving. Larry Jackson was a battler. But I always put myself in between because for the simple reason, what I wanted to do is Larry Jackson started a series, and he won, and I was the next pitcher. I was going to make sure I wanted to keep a winning streak going. Or if those two guys started, I was the third, I wanted to make sure. That was my object was to go ahead and stay with the record, two wins in a row or three wins in a row. I didn't want to be the outball out. So it made me battle more, even though I didn't show it out on the field.
And that was a pretty good pitching staff then.
Oh, yeah, we had a great pitching staff. Kurt Simmons was in there. Then Ray Sadecki came a little bit later.
And how would you describe your pitching style? Did it change over the years?
Not really. I just battled it. Never tried experience with any other pitchers. You know, pitches. Just maybe stay around a little bit longer. I just it's just same from the time I got into baseball to the time I got out. It never varied.
So just your luck, you're with the Cardinals all those years in 59.
Right.
You finished seventh, and Solly Hemus was a manager.
Right.
I don't know much about him.
All I know is that he was in the Cardinal organization for quite a few years, and I don't even know who the manager was before him. I want to think Freddie Hutchinson, but I'm not sure. In 58, but I'm not. No, I don't think he was. I think he was later. I don't remember who the manager was, and then they gave it to him, and he brought along two of his. You know. He's from Houston. Johnny King was from Houston. And Howie Paulette was from Houston. All three of them. So they more or less, you know, and all three of them were in the Cardinal organization.
So he brought those were his coaches in.
Right. And it turned out to be that Solly was an aggressive type of guy. And I got no complaints at all about Solly because he gave me the break. He gave me the opportunity to make the team. And they had traded for me Hobie Landreth and Benny Venezuela. The Giants traded for me. Marv Grissom and myself went to St. Louis, and I got a chance to get a trip to Japan out of it for the winter of 1958. Because 1958, I was with Phoenix, and I was 8-1. And they traded me because the general manager down there said that He says, I couldn't win in the big leagues. He says, I had no curveball. Well, you take anybody in the last 50 years to try to throw curveballs in Phoenix. You've got to throw them pretty good. You got to either hurt your arm really well.
Why? Because
gotta,
of the air?
Because of the air. But yet, I was 8-1 with a 4-point earned run average, which is probably any other ballpark would be a 2. Mm-hmm. And then I went up to, they traded me up to Toronto
International League.
I ended up winning with the two play. I was 19-4 in AAA for the year.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened is
No, wait a minute. Don't cut yourself short here.
No, I was 19-4.
You were 17-4.
Yeah, but I won two. I won two in the playoffs.
Oh,
so then,
oh
right
I see.
There. So I was 19-4.
Wow. Well, you remember your stats.
Yeah, well.
I didn't need to bring
good
these.
They're good ones.
Well, there weren't really too many bad ones.
No, I had my first year in the Giant organization, I had elbow problems. I hurt myself in winter ball in Oakland, playing over there. And I was 6-12, I think, in A ball at Johnstown.
56-12.
Yeah, right after Stockton. And then the following year, I was 17-something with Dallas. And then
19-6.
And then 19-4 in AAA. And
were there any notable managers or players on either Johnstown, Dallas, or Toronto?
No. Toronto was Harry Walker's brother, and Dallas was Salty Parker. Great guy.
Salty Parker.
Yeah, he eventually coached a couple years for the Giants. He was in the Giant organization. He was from Shreveport, Louisiana. And he was a really nice guy. I only had one really bad outing with a manager. That was Johnny Keene.
Yeah. I would have guessed that because, I heard he gets blasted in that book by Golenbach.
Oh, does it?
Oh, yeah. They don't.
I can't remember reading
it. He said he couldn't relate well to the players. He was kind of like a little general.
And, yeah, well, he was, basically. And, he was 25 years in the minor leagues for the Cardinals as a manager, and never got looked them. And then finally, when Solly brought him up, then I don't know if backstabbing or what is the right word or whatever happened, but he eventually got the job.
Yeah, because wasn't that weird after the '64 World Series? They fired Yogi and hired him. I mean, he didn't fit at all in that Yankee organization.
Oh,
he was there 1 year?
Yeah, that was done before the season was over with after him winning. Because I got a phone call.
You knew that was going to happen. Oh, wow.
Yeah, that was done before the season was over. And he never said anything. Accordingly, he never said anything until after the World Series was won. Hmm. But he had already
agreed to a
contract with the Yankees.
Wow. Well, on this 59 team, that was the first pro team you
played. Right.
I just want to talk about some of these guys and your remembrances of them. Like, of course, you remember the first time you met Stan Musial?
Great. Yeah, spring training.
Really?
Well, I'm going to take that back when I went to Japan. Just a neat guy, him and his wife. In fact, I still communicate a little bit. He's about the only one.
Really?
And he's so gracious. I mean, if I play in a golf tournament and I need a baseball or something, I'll send it to him. He'll sign it with no problem. Ask me if I need anything else. And I says, no, I've got nothing but.
Such a gentleman.
Oh,
you can never find any dirt on Stan Musial.
No, just a great guy.
There's a guy who was a catcher who lives here in San Jose. He didn't catch very much for Pittsburgh, Jim Mangan.
Yeah, I know Jim.
And he said that the first time he played, it was against St. Louis.
Yeah.
And that Musial was the only guy on the Cardinals to stop and as he was getting up.
Yeah.
He says, good luck in the major, son. We're glad to have you here with us. And it was really nice.
I was in the spring training with the Giants with Jim.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was over by.
It was funny to talk to him because I talked to him and he's a catcher and of course he's like this old not grizzled but he's still and then he showed me his pictures of when he was a kid and he looked like he looks like the comedian Chris Spade. He looks like a young blonde kid. He didn't look like a catcher at all.
Yeah,
he didn't look like he was big enough to be a catcher. When you compare him to Gus.
Huge,
Gus got these huge hands.
I call Gus the Greek god.
Yeah,
he's so big.
It was funny. We went to breakfast with him at the Flames, and one of the waitresses is going, who is that? Because she saw the microphone. I said, that's Gus Triandos. He was a pretty well-known baseball player back in the 50s. She says, when he leaves, I'll say something to him and make him feel good. I said, oh, great. She's a real little cutie. Well, he had a neck brace on, and she walks in at first, and she goes, look at that, making a joke about turn your head. So she walks up, and she says, I remember you. She goes, you were a great football player, weren't you? And he liked that, though. I think he and I are going to be friends. He called me last night.
Oh, did he?
And he says, I just want to sit down with you and make sure that you didn't make me look like an old, bitter ball player. I said, well, what else do you want me to make me look like, Gus? I mean, you badmouthed all everybody for 2 hours. And he says, and I go, I'm not going to mention the fact we had wine at 10 o'clock in the morning for breakfast. He goes, oh, thanks a lot for that one. He says, well, there's a lot of things I didn't get a chance to tell you, and I want to meet with you again. And I said, great.
Oh, good. He's a good guy.
So Musial was just a great guy.
Kenny Boyer, Musial. The whole organization made you feel. The first day in spring training, Mr. Bush, the team doctor, and everybody, they just introduced themselves and welcomed you. I had been with the Cubs, never knew Mr. Wrigley. Know that he signed my check, that was it.
Right.
When the Giant organization, Mr. Stone, we'd see in spring training. Mm-hmm. Of course, I never played in San Francisco or in New York, but just in spring training. Mm-hmm. But Mr. Bush, you'd see all the time.
Really?
He made you welcome to that organization. And I'm sure I heard a lot of good reports about Walter O'Malley with the Dodgers, that's the way he responded to.
Right. And then there was You had no. How many black players? You had Curt Flood and Bill White.
George Crow.
George Crow, right?
Who else?
No pitchers.
No, Gibby came in 60. 1960, Gibby came.
Vinegar Ben
Mizell. Yeah, he just passed away. He was a senator from Alabama, I think it was. Alabama, one of those southern states. He just passed away. So he's the one that got traded for Julian Javier.
Oh, really?
Julian Javier. Yeah, he went to Pittsburgh in 1960, and Javier came to us.
So they just made you a starter right away.
Yeah, well, basically, 60, I was relieving and starting, 1960. In fact, I think I won 7 games in relief in 1960. When I won 21 games.
So here they just had, it looked like they, 59, you really just had four starters, and then other guys that came in, and you, Larry Jackson, Vinegar, Ben Mizell, and Bob Miller, that was the starter.
Bob Miller, yeah.
And you went 7-12 with a...
Geez, all three of those guys have passed away.
Wow, you're the only one,
yeah.
Living one out of the four.
Yeah.
Well, you weren't the youngest. Bob Miller was 20, you were 20.
Yeah, I was best man at his wedding.
Wow.
Yeah.
And then you had Marv Grissom, 41
right.
years old.
He's up in Redding, still living up there. And I don't know who the other ones, I can't remember some of
Lindy
them.
Lindy McDaniel.
Oh, he's still around, sure.
I remember when he pitched for this.
He's 20 years, probably... Between him and Elroy Face, probably, or in Eckersley, probably the three longest relief pitchers in baseball.
Wow. Well, because I remember I was, 13. We lived in Connecticut. We were Yankee fans back in the bad years of the Yankees. And he was playing for them then.
So, yeah.
Okay, and then 60, you said you relieved and started.
Right.
They had Javier on the team. That was pretty much the only change. What about, I wanted to ask you about Bill White, because there was, some people had mixed feelings about him. Some of the players, both black and white, thought he was a little too militant.
No. To me, I didn't think he was. He was articulate, but militant, no. I felt he was great team player.
Wow.
If there was anything regarding that, might have been because he wanted to be a team leader.
Right.
But that was more or less handed to Kenny Boyer.
Right.
After Stan Musial retired.
Mm-hmm.
So that's basically probably where that came from.
Did these guys go, racism was still pretty prevalent then. I mean, did you ever have problems where they couldn't, I know that the Cardinals were really against it. Like Bush helped him buy a house, I think, or something.
Well, my first year in spring training, the black guys couldn't stay with us.
Really?
We were in downtown St. Petersburg, and Curt Flood, Bill White, George Crow. In fact, George Crow was the one that took all the black guys under his collar, and kind of kept them pretty well from keep them from being agitated. But they had us live with the black community. We were staying at a hotel, and they would not let them in. So the next year, if my understanding, I could be wrong, Mr. Bush bought a motel,
right,
at St. Petersburg Beach.
He sure did.
And we stayed out there.
The whole team could stay without any problems.
Right.
And that must have been a bummer sometimes, where you guys would all get off the bus, and you look, and they wouldn't get off the bus, or they'd have to go around the back. And
well, I experienced that in Dallas. When we went to Louisiana, we had three, Willie McCovey, Preston, who was Latin American.
Preston Gomez?
No, his last name was Preston. Bobby Preston.
Bobby Preston.
And Tony played in the big leagues for third base for the Phillies and Cubs.
Tony Taylor.
They could not go to Shreveport. So they got 3 days off.
What do you mean, they couldn't even go play the games there?
Nope. They would not let them on the field in Shreveport.
Oh, my God. I wonder how long that lasted.
That was 1957.
So that's 20 years after...
And the black people had their seats were beyond first base and third base in the outfield.
So this is 10 years after Jackie Robinson. And they still can't play on the field.
Well, 58, 59, yeah. They couldn't stay with us in St. Petersburg.
And what did the players say? I guess they're
well, you know,
3 days
I'm from California, and I've never seen anything like that. Right. My first year in spring training with the Giants in the minor league, when the Giants sent me to, I can't think of the name. It's where they shoot the Cape Canaveral now, but there was another name there. And I got on the bus, walked to the back, and the bus driver got on the microphone and says, where are you going? I said, I like to sit in the back of all the time when I fly. And he says, no, you don't. He says, you sit up in front. That's for black people. I said, whoa, okay. So I got up in front, went, got out at the bus station, got out of the bus. Restroom says black, white. I said, what the heck is that? Drinking fountains, black, white. I said, man, what the heck is this all about? Because being from California.
Okay, so then in 60, what do you remember about 60? Oh, I see Tim McCarver was 18 years old.
70. Yeah, yeah.
What do you remember about him?
Well, he came there, I think he played 1 year in the minor leagues. Came right out of some Catholic high school in Tennessee, Memphis, I think they're where he's from. And very surprisingly that they kept him. But he worked with a little bit, and then finally he started catching, and he took the job over.
How was he as a catcher? Did you like?
He didn't have a strong arm, mm-hmm. but as far as calling pitches, he was fine. And I'm not too sure, because in those days I wasn't really looking to see if he was looking towards the dugout to see if they were calling pitches for him or not. But in my heyday, I left 95% of the pitch call to the catcher anyhow. It was just a matter of me wanting to throw the ball in and out. If I didn't like the position of the glove, then I'd shake it off. But the pitch
count was fine. As far as the pitch itself, whatever it was.
I left it up to him.
And what about Hal Smith?
Hal Smith, same way. Great, good defensive catcher. Couldn't hit. And Carl Sawatsky, great. He was he wasn't a very good catcher, but he can hit. So we had...
yeah.
And then Carl was a left-handed hitter, and Timmy was a left-handed hitter, and Hal Smith was a right-handed hitter.
So really, as far as them, how they handled you, it didn't really matter?
No, it didn't bother me at all. Didn't bother me at all.
So you went 21-9 that year.
Right.
God, what a year. What do you have to say about that year?
Well, I mean, that's every pitcher's dream.
This was your second year in the majors.
Yeah, second year in the majors, and... I don't know if it's in the record books, but my recollection is I won 4 games in 3 days.
Wow.
We had a doubleheader against, I was relieving them. I had a doubleheader against Atlanta, or Milwaukee at the time, Milwaukee. I won the first game, lost the second game. Came back, we had a doubleheader the next day. I won both ends of the doubleheader in relief. Off day Sunday, and started again and shut out the Dodgers Monday.
Wow. I wonder if that's a record.
I have no idea, but, you know, I pitched one inning, never more than 2 innings.
Mm-hmm.
There's 1 inning in relief, but I won 3 games and lost 1 in relief, and then come back and shut out the Dodgers.
Because I remember Wilbur Wood pitched both games, won both games of a doubleheader.
But
I don't think he threw again until it was his start. After
yeah,
that,
but so. I come. It was that was 4 games in 3 days.
Well, that'll help your record.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then you guys finished third that year.
Right. We had won 20 out of 21 games. We were battling Dodgers. We come down. We got a 3-game series with the Dodgers. And I think we're 1 game out at the time. They're coming to our ballpark. I'm opening day against them. I take 2 sleeping pills the night before. I mean, potent sleeping pills, and I still could not sleep. I was so worked up. And they took me out of the ball game. The game was 1-1 in the 7th inning. And then I think Rob Nitton's dad, Dick Nitton, hit a home run off of Lindy McDaniel in the 10th inning to win it 2-1. And then we lost the other. Gibby got beat, and then I think Larry got beat. But we ended up losing 3 games. But I'll never forget Rob Ninja when I saw him in. In fact, there's about five guys playing in the big leagues right now that I play with their fathers. There might be more.
Who else?
Well, you have, well, Javier's not playing right now. So he had been. Nin. Oh, God, who else is there? Oh, I can't remember. I can't recall. You caught me off guard on that one.
I know. There's a couple other ones.
He caught me off guard.
Some other St. Louis Cardinals kid is playing.
Oh, Spezio.
Spezio, Ed right.
Spezio. Right. There's a few more.
I'll think of them. Okay, so you consider that your best year?
Yeah, because it was a combination of starting and relieving. And we had a caliber of ball players that I thought were great. And it's just that, you know, we didn't get off to a great start, but we battled back. And I thought the inspirational part of that was Kurt Flood playing music in the clubhouse on our 20-game win streak that we had. I mean, we win 20 games out of 21, and we're not in the ball game yet. We're not even in first place.
So you think that was kind of inspiring? Kurt Flood started playing music.
Yeah,
Like soul music.
No, it wasn't soul music. I forget. He brought this thing, and it was the same song over and over again.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It kind of became the team song.
Kind of like I guess you think about what's the word I'm searching for. I can't think of it right now, but that's what
superstitious.
Yeah.
But that was quite a streak.
Oh yeah, and then we didn't even get the first place.
That was your year. I mean, you look at all the stuff that happened here. You were top 10 in MVP voting. Now, this is something that I've had arguments about, and I tried to confirm whether Joe Antuzzi sweared you were second in Cy Young Award balloting. And I've seen it somewhere where it says second, but here it says third, so I don't know. You were second.
I thought I was second.
Yeah, okay. Well, this is incorrect then.
Yeah, I thought I was second.
And then,
because Bob Friend won it. Or Vernon Law won it.
Right.
And I was runner-up to him. Unless Warren Spahn was second.
Wow, I'll have to find out. And then you had the second-best ERA, 2.74.
Yeah. I got beat out because that, in fact, that's what cost me the Cy Young Award, I think. Now, in those days, they didn't do like they do now. You won the pennant, and you have a 20-game winner. You're automatically.
Right.
But I was pitching against Mike McCormick, and they, in fact, that was for my 20th victory. And they had given, no, it wasn't, yeah, 20th or 21st victory. And they had given our guys errors that were base hits.
Oh.
So he got it. He beat me out by, I think, 2 or 3 percentage points.
Now, in these times, there's only one Cy Young, right? For both leagues.
No, there was two.
Oh, there was
two.
Yeah, okay.
60. Yeah, there was two.
And then you won the most wins, 21. Of anybody in the National League, and then you had a 700% winning percentage, which was second.
Uh huh.
Pretty good hits per 9 innings. You had you were seventh.
Huh.
You were just incredible. Strikeouts per 9 innings, you were fourth.
Ooh.
Total strikeouts, you had 188. You were fourth. And then you always seem to show 3 or 4 or 5 shutouts every year.
Yeah, somebody wrote and told me. I didn't know it, but in my 8 years there, I had 18 shutouts.
Wow.
That I didn't know I had.
So that was tough. I mean, all these years you played with them from 59 to 64, the one year they get in postseason, they
trade. Yeah. Well.
What were your feelings like watching that World Series or listening to it?
Well, you know what was funny is that I got a phone call from them, from Stan Musial's restaurant. And the funny thing about it, I told the guy this. And I mean, it was jokingly. And this guy took it serious because he was writing a book about Stan Musial, and I wouldn't admit to it, but he was trying to make me say something derogatory towards Stan. I said, no, there's no way. I said that Stan says, hey, you guys can't use the phone in here. You're going to make a phone call. Along with this phone call, you got to use the payphone, you know. And this guy says, well, I heard it. And he was that type. I said, no, he wasn't. I said, that's a joke. But he kept writing back. I just refused to talk to him anymore. Some guy begging. But, you know, so we talked for over an hour. I can hear the change going in the main phone, you know. I've talked to everyone. And in fact, when they wanted, I was sitting here having champagne with them. And because I feel my one game, I was 1-0 when they traded me. I contributed to it.
Well, did they give you, did you get a?
No, you don't.
You don't get a share.
No. Because in those days, if you're traded within the same division, mm-hmm. You don't get any sharing of mm-hmm. anything. If I was traded to the American League, maybe I would have got, you know.
So that must have been kind of melancholy, even though you were happy.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure. Well, you know, that's everybody's dream. You hear Barry Bonds talk about it's a ring. It always, mm-hmm. Even though the money wasn't great, I think they got $10,000 to win the World Series that year. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the World Series ring looked like, mm-hmm. you know. But I wouldn't have cared so much. The money would have been nice. In those days, you don't make anything. But the ring would have been more to me than right. anything else. Just like that medal up there. That's
right.
You know, that's great. That's for me. That was outstanding for me.
There was one website I went on that had old Pacific Coast League collectibles, and one of the things they had was an Ernie Broglio mitt.
Yeah, McGregor.
Yeah.
McGregor, I got one in the mail not too long ago yeah. for me to autograph the thing.
Yeah.
Holy God, it was readable too. The name was still, so that guy preserved that thing pretty good.
Yeah. So, and then I guess your thoughts were it's going to be a long road. We're probably not going to get in the World Series anytime soon with the Cubs.
Well,
team or?
You know, I always felt that day baseball. You know, years ago they said day baseball was great, but I felt in modern day baseball was not
really
the answer. And I feel that was part of the problem with the Cubs. They had some great ball at Ron Santo, Billy Williams, Ernie Banks, George Altman,
Ron Santo, Billy Williams.
Yeah, and then you had Kessinger at shortstop. And I'm trying to think of the kid. Well, after Kenny Hubbs passed away, we had some pitching was pretty good, but I just felt day baseball was the problem there.
Now, who passed away?
When Kenny Hubbs was killed in that plane crash in '60 or '61, the second baseman. He was considered one of the best second basemen in baseball at
really?
The time.
Yeah. He didn't get to play very long.
No, oh, wow. He was killed in an airplane. He was flying it himself.
Dick Burchell.
The catcher.
Len Gabrielson. I remember.
Yeah, he's from Los Alamos.
In fact, he's on my list to interview.
Yeah, he's a funny guy. He's funny.
He?
Yeah. Yeah, he's funny.
And then Joey Amalfitano.
Yeah, that's my ex-roommate. He's not affiliated with the Dodgers. We roomed together for 6 years, 3 years in the Giants. He was a bonus baby with the Giants, 1954.
Yeah, because, I mean, Santo had like a MVP season almost that year.
Yeah.
30 home runs, 114 RBIs, and he batted .312. What was he like?
Ron, very good guy. Kind of a, you know, I always thought that Ernie Banks should have been our leader, you know, but Ron kind of took over the reins there, and because Ernie's kind of a laid-back type of guy, so I guess Ron wanted to be the, you know, team leader, which is, hey, you know, fine and dandy. But when Leo DeRocher got there, nobody was anybody, because he was the number one guy.
Yeah. Well, I got to hear about him. Well, first I want to ask you about Bob Kennedy. He was the man.
Great guy.
Before.
Great guy. Bob, you know, it's funny about Bob. There we are, we're in Wrigley Field, and pretty soon, you know, airplanes, because he was a pilot, he'd look up. No matter where we were, if he heard an airplane, he'd be looking up to see what the heck it was, you know. But a great baseball man, great baseball knowledge, but, you know, never had the opportunity, I guess, to manage a team. You
now,
know,
is he the one whose kid
right.
plays for the Angels? Okay,
right.
So there's one you
right.
played for or with. His kid plays
well,
for
no, not, no, his, now, this might be the other, I don't know, there's a lot of Kennedys, but the one Kennedy that was a catcher for
right.
the Giants was his boy.
Oh, okay. Right.
Now, this Kennedy
right.
here, I don't know if okay. that's related or not.
And that team finished eighth. So.
Yeah, we.
You were in trouble when you got there.
Right.
And how'd you like playing in Wrigley?
I didn't really like it.
Other than the day baseball.
Yeah, I didn't. I didn't like it. I was always hoping the wind was blowing in. Because the ball went out of there pretty
yeah,
good.
Yeah.
It didn't take much to hit one out. In fact, there was one incident, I don't know if Joe Torre remembers it, but I distinctly remember it. He hit a home run. I'm sitting in the bullpen, left field. He hit a home run. The wind was blowing so hard in that the ball was out over Waverly Avenue. The wind blew it back, and Billy Williams caught the ball with his back towards home plate.
I mean, that
is the most astonishing feat I've ever seen in my life. His back was towards home plate when he caught. In comparison, not the same fans as they are in St. Louis. Probably they're so used to losing all the time that they handpick people and boo the living heck out of you if you're not having the great year. And I won't say great year, but having a good year. And they kind of got on me. But
well, because they must have, as they saw Brock doing better and better.
Right.
They were pressing, they were expecting right. you to do more.
Right. And one incident many years after, they had an old-timers game there, and they brought Lou Brock and I in. And it was packed house. And they introduced Lou Brock first, standing ovation. And they were still standing and booing me. So I gotta be the only guy in the world.
They were still booing you.
I gotta be the only guy in the world to have a standing booing ovation.
Now tell me about that too. We went over it, but we just didn't talk about it that much. Tell me about the day of the trade.
I was in Houston, and Johnny Keene brought all three of us in and said that you guys are being traded, and he said you're going to Chicago, and I said, okay, fine, great, it's day baseball. But after I got there, I really didn't like day baseball, and nothing else could be said. I said, well, we got to be there. Because I had really no rapport with Johnny Keene. And I just, in some instance, I was glad. They were in seventh place when I got traded.
Right.
Lou Brock brought him the world pennant in the World Series.
Right. So you didn't know then. You figured you were going to one mediocre team to another.
But on the long run, in fact, they would just had that some program I was watching on ESPN. That Gene Mock basically was considered one of the top managers in baseball, and they were what, 10 games in front, 7 games in front, and they lost it the last 10 days.
Yeah, that was a game.
So it wasn't for
the Whiz Kids.
Yeah, no, not the Whiz. That was 1950.
This was
1964.
Right. Okay.
If it wasn't for Gene Mock trying to use his starters as relievers too. They probably would have won it.
Plus, he threw Bunning to a few days rest and
yeah. Well, he had one of the best relief pitchers in and never used him the last week or so. Jack Balsam.
So really, what happened? Is a lot of people think they pretty much handed the Cardinals that.
I think so. Yeah.
And then Barney Schultz, I guess, pitched all those
relief jobs. Him and I think Lindy was still. Yeah, Lindy was still on the team then. Yeah.
Well, in this book, they said that Bob Gibson thought it was a stupid trade. Did he tell you that?
Yeah. Well, they all, that's kind of the team unity we had. And, it's nice for people to say that. But in the long run, trades are made to better one another or, you make a trade to better your team.
Mm-hmm.
In some incidents, it works out. In other instances, it doesn't. It just so happened that it worked out for them. I knew I had arm problem,
mm-hmm.
and that they probably, now they go have you go in and get checked out before things are done, and they didn't do that in those days.
So they didn't know? The Cardinals didn't know you had arm problem?
They knew.
They knew.
Yeah.
So they were really...
They were keeping it quiet.
They were shipping
the
Cubs.
Sure. I took 21... I had elbow, my elbow was fine, but I went in 1961, 61, I took... 20 cortisone shots in my shoulder. Every other start.
So they thought they were getting away with something.
Yeah.
In a way.
Well, they know that's probably the reason why, other than me and Johnny Keene not getting along, because which was told, what was told to me originally was that Ray Washburn was supposed to have been the player to be traded for Lou Brock. But I got in the doghouse with Johnny Keene, so that's why they, and then they knew, they said, man, 18-game winner the year before, and I had pretty good success against the Cubs.
So I guess the Cardinals, I mean, the Cubs kind of maybe thought that they had something with Brock, but they were willing to give him up for pitching.
Yeah, yeah, because they did need some pitching.
Right. Now tell me again what happened between you and Keene.
Well, it just, I to this day don't know how it started or what, but there was something, as he was a coach, I got taken out of a ball. I was mad at myself, and I come in and I picked up bats and threw them, you know, and I guess one slipped out of my, they were in my way. I just kind of slammed down. I guess one bounced off his foot. And I think he was on my case ever after, you know, ever since that happened. But, you know, hey, you got to respect the guy's attitude for, you know, I think I had a 2-run lead or something, blew it, whatever the circumstance was. I was mad at myself, you know, but evidently he didn't like that. Mm-hmm. And so ever since then, that's the only thing I can remember that I got in the doghouse with. Mm-hmm.
And so when you went, after they traded you then, you got to go, where were the Cubs? Where did you have to go to?
They were in Chicago. I had to go back to St. Louis, and then I drove to Chicago, because in those days they gave you a couple of, I think, was it 48 hours or something, mm-hmm. like that to be, and I told them I had to go to get my car and I'll drive.
So when you went down to the to get your stuff to go, the St. Louis players were there?
No, they were in Houston.
Oh.
Okay. They flew us from Houston.
So you didn't really get a chance to talk to them then?
Other than at the hotel, say goodbye to them, that was it. And then talk to them when they came into Chicago. In fact, I think I pitched against them. Didn't fare too well, because my elbow was bothering me at the time.
And then how quickly did you play once you hit Chicago? They put you right in the rotation?
Yeah, stuck me right in. To my knowledge, I mean, that's, some of that is kind of...
a little fuzzy. It's been a few years.
Yeah.
But, so that year you were 4-7.
Okay.
Is that right?
At Chicago, yeah.
Yeah, 4-7 with right. one save. And, but you're saying you could start to feel that your arm was going even then.
Yeah, it was. It was bothering me. I mean, because just throwing the curveball used to kill me. And then when they went in there, they discovered that the ulnar nerve was completely shifted. Mm-hmm. And they had it transplanted back. And then, you know, that operation, if it happened a year later, would have been a Tommy John operation. But in those days, I had it done in November back in Chicago. And I'm in spring training in February. So I didn't have much time.
Mm-hmm. To recuperate. It wasn't completely healed.
No, my first pitch. In our workouts and everything, I threw it over to the backstop.
And then Larry Jackson was there.
Right, he got traded.
24-11.
Right, he had a great year, and he might have been instrumental in me coming over there too. I don't know. We never discussed it.
And then Bobby Shantz didn't really pitch that much.
No. More or less of a relief pitcher.
Now, who would you, okay, so then 66, you finished 10th. Now I got to hear about Leo.
Leo? You know, in all due respect, I really liked the guy. He was mean, but if he would have kept me, he would have got the most out of me. Because he was the type of guy that I wanted to show him that I was better than what he thought I was. But I don't know, you know, he didn't consider it. We had a situation where I was supposed to start against the Mets, and then in those days you would start against the Mets with crutches, you know.
Yeah,
just to go out there.
That was a sure win.
And
but this team was almost as bad as the Mets.
Yeah, we didn't have
59-103.
Yeah, we didn't have a great team.
Allowed 809 runs that year.
So the ball game is over, and we got beat, and I'm sitting in my locker. Harvey Keene is sitting next to me, and Billy Heff is sitting on the other side of me. And he has a meeting. And he says to me, "What's wrong with you?" And I looked up and I says, "Screw it, Bill. Not the time and place to discuss it." And looked back. So he went on. So he goes up to his office and he tells Ron Santo to come and get me. And I told Ron Santo, if he wants me bad, he wants me, he comes down and gets me. I don't want no in-between guy. And Ron went back and told him, so I said, oh boy, I'm in trouble now. So the next day, I went to his office. I apologized how stupid I was, but I was mad. Because I'm struggling, and I want, you know, I had the arm operation, and I'm struggling and everything, and I want, you know, I'm trying to stay around, and, but it didn't work out, so I apologize, but I was in his doghouse from the get-go. But I had seen him numerous of times after. I told him, I said, Leo, I said, you don't know what you could have got out of me. But, you know, you don't tell, you know, you just don't do what I did to a man of that caliber.
Now, did he ever like shove any of the players or anything? Did
you no, see? No.
Now, was this when when he was getting a lot of bad press for being married to that going out with that starlet or whatever?
Lorraine Day?
Yeah.
Yeah. It could have been. Yeah, it could have been. But you know, they brought Leo in. He was, I think, at the time coach for the Dodgers, and then he brought him in, and he brought in a pitching coach who was retired, but he forced him to come back. But Leo was that type
of
guy.
Who was it?
I'm trying to think what the heck his name is. I can't recall his name. Fitzpatrick. Fitzgerald Fitzpatrick. But he had pitched in the big leagues with Leo on the...
Fitzsimmons.
Fitzsimmons. Yeah, Freddie Fitzsimmons. Yeah. And so, you know, he brought him out of retirement. Freddie didn't really want to, according to him.
Was he a good pitching coach? Not really.
No, he didn't. Probably you know, too much. No. In those days, pitching coaches aren't like they are now.
Really?
No, they didn't. They, no. In fact, you know, we never had minor league pitching coaches. Like, each team has got a pitching coach nowadays. High school teams got pitching coaches now. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. we learned within ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah, I've heard about that. They said there was a new breed of, a lot of people say it started with the guy who was a pitching coach for the Dodgers. As to really working extensively the pitcher. Red Adams was one of the first guys who really, you know.
They probably, yeah, because I heard a lot of good things about him. Yeah. But, you know, that even like Howie Paulette, there was one thing that they did with me, and which was helpful for me. I was, and they spotted me doing it. Somebody was behind home plate in the stands behind home plate, and what I was doing, I was focusing on the hitter instead of the catcher. And so they brought me, got me on the side, worked with me on that. And it just a rut that I got in, didn't know I was doing it. And I was hanging pitches inside. But they corrected that. But as far as really getting into your head like they do now and, you know, and try to really work, nah, they didn't do any of that. They just relied on your ability.
Did you ever get in a fight in a game?
One time. And that was against Johnny Logan. And it's funny. Joe Adcock hit a home run in the second inning off of me. A 3-1 pitch. It was ball four, but he took me long ball straight away center field. And Johnny Logan was the next hitter. And I wasn't. It was the second inning. I didn't, you know. And a pitch got away from me, and it lowered him pretty good. Well, the next day he tried to bunt down to first base. And then the light went on in my head, and I said, he's trying to get me. So the next pitch, I did come back inside, and it went ball two, then he swung and fouled one off, and it went 3-2. And funny thing about it, he swings, and the ball dribbles down first base, right? I go over to feel it, and I can hear, normally you can hear the difference, grass and dirt. And I can hear the footsteps, and I turn around, he's running. I'm about 6 feet off the foul line, 7 feet off the foul line. He's running at me. So I just stepped to the side and buried the ball between his shoulders. And we both fall on our knees, and we start crawling at each other, and both benches are empty. And we were right by the Milwaukee side, and all of a sudden I get a big pair of bear claws on my shoulders. And I hear this word, hey, Earn. You ought not to hit a guy when he's down on his knees. And I look up, and it was Joe Adcock. I said, you got that right, Joe.
He was a big dude.
Huh? Whoa, man. Yeah, Joe was strong, too. But yeah, I thought that was funny. That's the only time I ever come within there. Yeah. But and then Harry Carey interviews us the next day. Mm-hmm. So there was no, you know, animosity between the both. And I told him, I said, Johnny, what this is the second inning. I wasn't trying to hit you. Mm-hmm. He said, I don't know that, which is right. So Harry tried to get a little feud going too, but you know, it was all ironed up.
Well, they used to do that a lot more in the old days. They don't do that anymore, where they bunt and try to nail you going down the first base.
Yeah, we were talking about it yet the other day. Ron Hunt at one time took, I don't know how many hits to get on base. I think it was somewhere between 38 and 50 times you got hit with a. Now you get hit, they want to challenge you.
Well, actually, Don Baylor broke his record.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, for career times being hit by a ball.
Okay.
He has just refused to back off the plate.
Yeah.
You know? And then what about umps? Did you ever get thrown out by an ump?
No. No. What? Yeah, one time. Jocko Conlon in spring training. I hadn't seen him. That was with the Giant organization. I balked or something, and I think he threw me out. I hadn't seen him for quite a few years. And we're umpiring, we're playing a game in Las Vegas. The Cardinals against the Cubs, I think it was, in Las Vegas. And Jocko's on the bus. He's one of the umpires. And I forgot all about it. He comes up to me and says, hey, kid. He says, you still mad at me? I said, for what? He said, you don't remember? I says, no. Oh, okay. Well, then I won't say nothing about it. Well, I'll tell you what. When I pitched in a ball game, if Jocko was there, I got some pretty good pitches.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Jocko was notorious for not having a ball game go more than 2 hours and 15 minutes.
Oh, really?
He won the ball game.
Wow.
But a good umpire. There's a play at home plate, and Leo's coaching third base. And he thought the runner was safe. Jock would call him out. They're down there arguing. Finally, Leo kicks dirt on the plate. Jocko dusts it off. Leo kicks it again. Now, Jocko kicks Leo in the shins. Like he's trying to dust the plate off with his foot, so he kicks him in the shins. Leo turns around and kicks him in the shin, but Leo don't know. He's got shin guards. Jocko's got shin guards on. Leo don't. And they're kicking each other in the shin.
Leo's getting the
worst. And they're both about this high, you know. They're both about the same height, about 5'5 or whatever, 5'6. It's so funny. There must be, I don't know, 40,000 people at the Coliseum, and they're kicking each other in the shin.
Now, who were the hitters that owned you?
Do
you remember?
Boy. All of them. You know, I really don't know. Probably Junior Gilliam. I'm trying to think of a few more. Power hitters, you know, they're all going to be great. You're going to give up home runs to the big guy. Frank Robinson was kind of tough. Veda Pinson was tough. Those guys from the Bay Area.
Right.
I'm trying to think of Tommy Davis for the Dodgers. Mm-hmm. Smokey Burgess for Pittsburgh. So there was some that was tough, you know, to get out. Others, I was.
Were there any that you were there any Hall of Famers you remember that you pitched well? I mean, how did you pitch Hank Aaron?
Hank Aaron, I'm in his book 8 times.
He got
8 home runs off of me,
wow.
Which is
was that not, the most, you think?
I don't know. That to me, that's one a year.
Yeah.
You know, so
it's not that bad.
No, to me, it's not that bad.
No.
That would be, you know, the rest of them, I don't know. I don't know about Willie Mays. I'm pretty sure McCovey doesn't have that many. I don't know if Mays has that many.
What about Aaron?
Aaron's got 8. 8 home runs.
What was the other one I was going to say?
Matthews, I don't think has that many. few other ones. Banks, I know, didn't have that many off me. Either did Billy Williams. I don't know if they have a stat on how many home runs I gave up.
Well, I'm supposed to have that, but they didn't get it to me, so I will have it.
I'm not sure, but the only thing I do know is that somebody reminded me that Henry Aaron's book, they have a stat of all the home runs he hit, and somebody told me I gave up 8 to him. So
I wonder how many pitchers who gave up more than that.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm sure there were.
Maybe somebody pitched longer than, you know, than 8 years than I did, might have given up a few more. So.
Right. Now, were there any guys that you remember that you pitched particularly well against that were big names?
Trying to think. Not really. It's hard when you got arm trouble. You're not very good. And when I was winning, I was good. So I evidently got a lot of people out.
Mm-hmm.
And when I had the losing records, I didn't get too many people out. So you know, I don't know if one offsets the other.
Do you remember how many game-winning home runs you gave up?
One that I know. Now that one, and that was a grand salami. And that's the only one. And he played third base for the Dodgers. And I'm trying to think of his name right now. Big, tall guy. And that one there's the only one. That's the only grand slam I remember giving up.
Hmm.
And that was when I was having shoulder problems.
You remember the guy's name?
No, by God, and I got a picture.
Gabrielson played third for the Dodgers, and Junior Gillian played third for the Dodgers.
No, this was a big, tall guy. He's about 6'2", tall guy. And I can't remember what the heck his name is. And
I'll have to look it up.
Yeah.
I'm a Dodger fan, so.
Oh, are you?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I know a lot of them.
But I can't remember his name, doggone it.
And he hit a grand slam to win.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's the only one.
Now, Joe told me that you also won the game that put the Giants and the Dodgers in the...
Oh, yeah. That was a great series. That was the when we went into L.A., they had to beat us one game. And we ended up beating them 3 games. Larry Jackson started Friday night and beat them 3-2 in 10 innings. I pitched Saturday night, won 2-0.
Now, who'd you pitch against? Remember?
Drysdale. And Kurt Simmons beat Padres 1-0 Sunday. They got the champagne and everything, you know, the big magnums and everything. And I got a 1-0 lead going into the 7th inning. And 50-something thousand people standing up, rooting and on. And I wanted to get a shovel and dig as deep as I could on that mound because, I mean, it was tough. And we ended up scoring another run in the top 8, and I went it 2-0. And then Kurt Simmons, Gene Oliver hits a home run, I think, in the 7th or 8th inning and wins it 1-0, right? So the Giants go down and win. So we give up 2 runs in 28 innings. All pitchers finished and started. Started and finished each game. No relief at all. San Francisco goes down to L.A. I think they win in the playoff. When they win it, they go to the World Series. They fly Gene Oliver out from something more in Illinois. He's in the ticker tape parade with the key to the city. He gets one hit, played in one game. We got 3 pitchers that give up 2 runs in 28, and what do we get? Nothing. But the guy hit the home run, gets the key to the city. Let's figure that one out. Who worked the hardest? Yeah. So I tell you, like the old saying is, hitters drive Cadillac, pitchers drive Fords.
How did you like playing in Dodger Stadium?
Oh, that's a good stadium. Good stadium. A little tight down the lines, but center field, the ball in those days didn't carry like it does now. And I don't care what they say. The ball has got some juice in it now.
It's been juiced for the last 10 years, I think. Well, one player I was going to ask you, how did you do against Clemente?
Roberto, a very good hitter. He got his base hit. He never got the long ball off of me that I can recall, but he got his share of base hits, and I had my share of outs with him too. He's a tough out. Oh, Bart, come in for a second.
Okay, so then, my birthday's August 31st, 1958. Oh. So we're pretty close. Yeah, we're both 27, Virgo, yeah. I guess. Right?
Yeah.
Are you Virgo?
Yeah.
So then at the end of the career, in 66, you were 2-6 with the Cubs.
Right.
And they sent you down to Tacoma.
Tacoma, right.
Now, what was that like? That must have been kind of tough, the end of your career.
Not really. Like I said, I got in the doghouse with Leo, so I figured it was going to be, you know, if he kept me, I would have been surprised, and I would have done a pretty good job for him, but he didn't keep me. So it was just a matter of going down, and Joey was down there, so I wasn't going down, you know, unexpected.
To Malfitano?
Yeah. In fact, he was kind of they sent him down. I don't know the whole story behind it, but they sent him down. I don't know if they were trying to trade me or what they were trying to do, but he was kind of the guinea pig to go down there. And then supposedly he said later that I went down there, we were going to bring him back. Well, he ended up staying there for a few weeks longer, then they brought him back up there. But we're still friends and everything. But then I said, well, I'll give it one more year. So Cincinnati, asked me to go to spring training. I said, okay, you know, different organization. So they said that to make a trade, I forgot what the story was, they had to make a trade, but they were going to wait to see what I did in spring training. So they invited me to go there. I said, okay. So I drove there to Florida. I had a pretty good spring, Pete Rose and all that bunch is there. And I'm going, man, I think I got this team made. Well, they decided not to keep me. I said, well, that's it. I'm gonna retire.
Did they say why?
You know, never gave me an answer why. And so they said to me that you're gonna go to Buffalo. I said, no, I'm not. I'm going home. I said, give me my transportation money and I'm going home. Well, no, we're not gonna give you. I said, well, wait a second now. You invited me. I didn't ask for me to come to your training camp. Well, we don't have to do that. So Marvin Miller, who we had just voted in as our union rep, he happened to be in spring training at the time. And Milt Pappas was our team representative. So I went to Milt, and Marvin says, Ernie, they have the right, but he says, I hate to say this, but you're going to be the guinea pig. This will never happen again. So I said, okay. So meanwhile, they said, well, we'll give you a raise to go to Buffalo. I said, how much? They said, $500. That's like 50 cents. So I ended up getting a $2,000 raise, and I went to Buffalo. And I got to play for Don Zimmer. Great guy.
Oh, yeah, Don Zimmer.
Great guy, yeah. And I thought maybe that I ended up winning 14 games for him down there. And I thought maybe that they would bring me back up. But when they didn't, I just came home. And I retired.
And what did you do?
When I came home, I had worked for a liquor company here in San Jose, Joseph George Liquor Distributors, sure, for quite a few years in the wintertime. But they were kind enough to give me a job during the wintertime. And I worked for them. And then when I retired, I just wanted to work full-time for them.
For how many years?
Oh, boy. Off and on, 20 years.
Wow. So what was your job with them? You were like...
I did a sales job for a little bit, which I regretted. And then I was mainly in the warehouse.
Why didn't you like sales?
I was involved with too much drinking. I had a lot of bars. I was the last guy, and all the other salesmen got rid of their junk, and I loaded on me. But it was tough.
Because all the owners go, sit down.
Oh, yeah, especially knowing you were a baseball player. It was tough, 9 o'clock in the morning. So I just, about a year and a half of that, and I just went to him. I says, I can't go do it anymore. And they said, well, you're going to go low man on a totem pole because of the union. I said, that's all right, fine. So then I got laid off. Okay. I didn't fight it. And my next door neighbor at the time, he's passed away since, got me a job at Pepsi Cola. So I become a night supervisor over there loading trucks. And then Joseph George asked me to go back, and I worked my way back into that. Then they shut the doors. So
yeah, my sister-in-law worked for Pepsi for 8 years. Now she works for Evian.
Pepsi, where?
Down in L.A.
Oh, down in L.A.
Yeah.
Well, the Capodonicos own this up here. They're a big, big family. Yeah. They sold out.
Why is it the Italians own all the liquor distributors? In
it? Yeah, I don't know.
Isn't that funny?
Yeah.
It seems like in every town you go to, you know, they always do.
I don't know. Prohibition, man.
So did you ever, because you were Italian and anything, did you ever track any mob guys who were big fans in Chicago or something?
No. That's one thing. I've been, Joe and I stayed together, and even though I was married at the time, but my wife never liked hot weather, so she stayed here. She experienced St. Louis one year, and it was just too hot for her. So that's the only time she actually went on the road with me, was one year in St. Louis. And the rest of the time, she would come visit and then come back home.
The humidity in
St. Louis, Chicago. She came to Dallas, and she was going to stay a month. She stayed about 2 weeks, and she couldn't take that in either.
And did she go to spring training?
No. Yeah. Never went to spring training. We had four kids real quick, like, because I... we were married 19, so we'll be married 47 years this year, 47, 48 years.
Wow.
1954.
It's a rarity.
So, yeah, 48 years. Yeah.
Wow, so two years you get your golden anniversary.
Yeah.
Well, you look in pretty good shape for your age.
Well, I've had second stage diabetic, and I've had a layoff of a lot of stuff. And
what did you do to the diabetes? Did you have to quit drinking?
Yeah. I still have, you know, a glass of wine now and then, a dry glass of wine and stuff like that.
Can't eat all the cake and sugar. And
that's all gone, but there's so much sugar-free stuff out there now that's unbelievable. In fact, I drive to Capitola to get my sugar-free chocolates.
Do you?
Yeah, there's a place over there.
Yeah, I'm diabetic too.
Are you?
Level one, you know, I just take the meds.
Yeah, I'm not on insulin. I'm not on anything.
Good,
I do exercise.
Yeah.
And I probably, I don't check my blood count or nothing. Yeah. I just do it.
Well, you know, if you know how you feel, you feel lousy.
Yeah.
The thing, big thing for me was to lose weight.
Right.
I was 340.
Oh boy.
So I lost I'm about 280 now. I lost 60 pounds and a lot of my problems went away.
When I came
back. I started to have problems with my feet.
Feet, that's
me
too.
You ever notice that?
Yeah.
Like you get numb and you,
you
gotta take good care of your
feet. Yep. And, I was down when I came back from Italy. I lost over 20 pounds.
I thought you're supposed to gain weight in Italy.
No, they only eat twice a day.
I know they don't.
Yeah, that was great. And I had to watch myself with the pasta over
there,
you know, because of the diabetic.
I sure can't have too
and,
much.
But the food was so good. Talk about getting spoiled.
Well, I have an open invitation. My family's all from, I'm half Irish, half Italian. My family's all from Calabria.
Oh,
and
okay.
I have a cousin who owns a hotel there.
Oh boy!
And he says, anytime you want to come out, he goes, you don't, you know, we won't even let you touch your wallet.
Boy,
so I gotta go. I mean, especially the way the flights are now, you can go for like, you know, my buddy went, really shopped for his ticket. He was $400 round trip.
Really?
Yeah. He got on Priceline and just kept plugging away, and he finally got the lowest fare he could get.
Well, I had three dreams in life, and two of them have been accomplished. The third one, if they were to retain me as a pitching coach. 2004, they'll go to the Olympics. That would have been, to me, would be like playing in the World Series. So I got my trip to Italy. I won 20 games in the big leagues. And I don't think I'm going to go to the Olympics, and I don't think I'm going to be in the World Series.
Why not go to the Olympics?
Well, because I don't think they're going to retain. I think they hired a new manager. The Italian national team hired a new manager, and I'm pretty sure I'm not going to go back as a pitching coach.
Who was the new manager? You don't know.
I don't know. Somebody said that it was the manager of Natuno, the town we stayed in. They won the Italian league last year. So
now these teams, the Italian teams, have absolutely no shot of beating any of these U.S. teams or Japanese or Russian or
Cuban. But you know that if it wasn't for an error, the Italian team in the 2000 Olympics would have beat the United States team.
Oh wow, I didn't know that.
And we had a kid from they had a kid from San Jose State that pitched Samatachi, pitched for the Italian team and had him beat 2-0. And they got beat. They got beat because of a throwing error. I think they got beat 3-2 or 4-2.
Wow.
In the seventh or eighth inning.
Now you must be named, get named to some all Italian American teams.